You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. We're live. It is Thursday, July 25th, 9 o'clock Pacific. Thank you so much for joining us. If you are joining us live, and if you have downloaded on demand, we thank you for that as well, because we want to help get the news out, the messages out, in as much as an unfiltered, unbiased manner as possible. So we endeavor to do that every time. And obviously, we can't focus on all the stories, so the ones that we do try and talk about and shed some light on are the ones that we think that are the most important of the day. And that's what this whole world of podcasting is about, which is fabulous, is that you get to find what interests you and then go from that. So not every day might be of interest, and that's fine, because that's why there's 500 cable channels, and I believe I heard 180,000 podcasters out there, and iHeartRadio is now getting into it. As well, they announced yesterday that they've started a talk radio channel on iHeart. It's iHeart Radio Talk is what they're calling it. So this world of podcasting has more than taken off, and social media is redefining how we get news and how we see news. From everything like this train that crashed in Spain, they released footage of it onto YouTube yesterday, and you can see for yourself as it rounds the bend. They're saying at 120 miles an hour, twice the speed that it should be traveling, and smashes. Some of the stuff I don't look at because I don't really want to know, even just some of the descriptions. Some of the stories that I see, there was a story in Omaha that made the news today about a 92-year-old woman who over the weekend was beaten and sexually assaulted by a 19-year-old, and she died yesterday. And it's like, do we really need to? But I know it's news, and so I only mention that is that I rarely go and click in to see the details on something like that, because the headline is enough. That I did because it was like, you know, I can't always put your head in the sand. We have on the program, though, we get a chance to get into the news today more than we normally do, and then later on the show we've got a woman who is a dating advisor. She also launched several of the world's first eco-friendly fashion clothing lines that have gained national and international distribution, including private label lines for many accounts. And she has a website called badonlinedates.com, which we're going to talk to her about, and also dressforthedate.com for the right date outfit. So sometimes we like to delve into more light things so that we're not always serious. And speaking about serious, though, tomorrow morning, and she's probably going to be our only guest tomorrow because the topic is so heady and worthy that I don't want to take the risk of running the conversation short. But we have the largest report yet into the extent of female genital mutilation was released this week by UNICEF. And the woman who authored it is going to be visiting with us. So if you don't know what female genital mutilation is, you probably can guess based on the three words, or FGM as it's called. So she's going to talk to us about that and the savage practice that happens in 29 countries in the world. More than 125 million females alive today have undergone some form of it, but some 30 million girls remain at risk of being cut in the next 10 years unless we do something to help eliminate the practice and make more headway. So Pope Francis is still in the news. They're calling him the slum pope. He went to the slums this morning in Rio de Janeiro, shanty town, or favelas, as they're called, where they've got crack cocaine being smoked around the clock, and they've got just its squalor and everything else. So he wades into the crowds. He hugs and kisses the residents as young and old. He blessed the altar at the church that serves the community that he was in. He met with a family in their little home and prayed before a replica of Brazil's patron saint, the Virgin of Aparecida. His open-air car has been mobbed, as always. He showered with gifts. He walked down one of the main drags without an umbrella in the rain. He had a paper lei around his neck. He had a scarf from his favorite soccer team that was offered to him. So he's bringing a message of hope is what they're saying. And as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, when he was the then his name was Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio, he preached in the slums of his native city, and he's doing that again. And later today, he's going to preside over a welcoming ceremony on the Copacabana Beach for the World Youth Day. This is going to be his first official event with the World Youth Day, where they're saying up to a million youth are coming to see that. This time, however, they said security was tight, unlike his last few visits. He landed on Monday. In addition to the police helicopters, sharpshooters that were on top of the building, metal barricades, police officers were posted every 5 feet. So he doesn't seem to think that he's in danger. He's got less security than any pope has ever had, and that's because that's the way he wants it. He wants to get in with the people. He started the day today by receiving the keys to Rio and blessing the Olympic flag. They say this is kind of a tradition with popes who have shown an interest in the positive role that soccer can play in society, or football, as it's called everywhere else in the world. He also greeted some of Brazil's Olympic athletes during a brief visit to Rio's City Palace. And from the balcony, he blessed the Olympic flag with holy water and imparted a blessing on those gathered. Rio de Janeiro, by the way, is hosting the 2016 Summer Games. So it seems like it's quite timely. So nationally, Carolyn Kennedy has been nominated by President Barack Obama yesterday to serve as U.S. ambassador to Japan. She would become the first woman to hold that post if she's confirmed. And of course, she served as the co-chair of President Obama's Vice Presidential Search Committee in 2008. She made speeches at the 2008 and 2012 Democratic National Convention. She's received degrees from Harvard and Columbia. She's been married a long time. She's the mother of four. And what a capacity that would be for her. The United States is Japan's largest economic partner as well as a military ally. So getting into the sex scandal with Anthony Weiner, and then there's another story in San Diego with their mayor. It's like, you know what? Just put blinders on and act like a decent human being. So the woman who his latest sexting episodes with has been identified, and she was identified yesterday by the website BuzzFeed and the first one to print her name, which I don't know how she feels about that, but now she's a public entity. She's 23 years old, an Indiana native. She's passionate about politics. She was a strong supporter of Anthony Weiner, even after he resigned from Congress. One of the quotes she said is something about, let him legislate. He deserves to legislate as long as he continues to legislate in this manner. So she idealized the man. One of the folks that knows her, his name is Lou, and it's a very long, Cola Giovanni, is a political blogger and writer who moderates a political Facebook page where I think that's how they met. Anyway, he did interviews yesterday, and one of them was with CNN, and he said that she absolutely idealized this man, and that she would send him some of the lewd emails and the sexts that went on, and he said that it lasted at least 8 months, maybe as long as a year, and that she told this gal, her name is Sydney Elaine Leathers, told Cola Giovanni in their Facebook conversations that she and the congressman had phone sex, texted, emailed, and sent each other nude pictures of themselves. So his quote is, Sydney loved him, but then she fell out of love with him because the idealized vision in which she had of him was not true, was not the case. She became disgusted with him after finding out that the person who she thought she was in love with was not indeed that person. So if you didn't catch our program yesterday, which was Wednesday, July 24th, I suggest that you do, because we had Dr. Bonnie Eaker Weil on the show. She is actually, she shared with us yesterday that for the third year in a row, she's been voted best therapist in New York City, which is not a trifling of an accomplishment. She has some pretty interesting takes on adultery. She's written a book, which is how we met years ago. It's called Adultery, the Forgivable Sin. And she talks about how it's a disease. It's a biochemical imbalance. And you can't just do rehab and therapy. You have to treat the brain and you have to treat the body. So she talks about dopamine and serotonin and how important that is to have them balanced. She works with a medical doctor. He prescribes like an opiate to get the brain to calm down. And then she says a diet, you have to take sugar and carbs out of the diet because that's what the body wants. And when you do that and therapy, she claims she has a 98% success rate. So if you didn't listen to it, I suggest that you do. She's quite opinionated and she's very interesting. She's very compelling. And I'm always so grateful that these correspondents that visit with us when their field of expertise is in the news and they take the time out of their day to be on the program with us. And she's world renowned. And also on our website, we published her contact information because she does consulting on the phone or on Skype and web and stuff like that. So you can get that all at mariasanchezshow.com, her contact information. But also speaking of our correspondents, one of our medical correspondent, who is Dr. Michael Applebaum, who lives in Chicago, he's not only a medical doctor, but he's an attorney as well. He sends me stories all the time about things. And one of the stories that he sent today was how they show before and after pictures with somebody. And there's this before and after picture of a personal trainer, like bloated, out of shape, overweight, and then the after buff. Toned, he even has, I would call it a six pack, pretty much. The pictures were taken 1 hour apart. And so what he showed and says, and there's a video that documents how they do it in terms of lighting and exercise and pulling in your abdomen and all that sort of thing. So Dr. Applebaum sent that to me this morning. But so Anthony Weiner is in the news still. Of course, people are calling on him to resign from the campaign. And the woman standing behind her man, Uma or Huma, however you want to say her name, Abedin, brings up a really good story and lots of controversy about that. The woman standing by her man, she, when he called this hastily called press conference on Tuesday afternoon to address the allegations that new sexting had been revealed post resigning from Congress. And he said, well, I told you that there was going to be other things that were probably going to come up. And well, obviously he knew this. So this is, of course, while ostensibly he's working on his marriage and et cetera. So 8 months, maybe a year, he's sexting with this. She was 22 at the time. She's 23 now. He's 48. Small world story is one of my brothers actually was in Washington, D.C., I don't know how many years ago, 15, I think it was. And he was friendly with Anthony Weiner back then. They had the same circle of friends. So anytime a story comes up, I send a link to my brother and I'm like, is this guy for real? And he goes, I know, people just can't stop. It's like ridiculous. So Abedin began working for Hillary Clinton as a White House intern in 1996 and eventually became the former First Lady's traveling chief of staff during her campaign for the 2008 Democratic presidential nomination. When Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, Abedin served as a top aide to her, and she remains a Clinton advisor. She was profiled in Vogue magazine in 2007. Which is unusual because she was a campaign aide, and that was even before she met Anthony Weiner. She was introduced to him in 2008 during the campaign. This is the background on her, and this is a quote from Hillary Clinton in Vogue when they profiled Huma. Huma Abedin has the energy of a woman in her 20s, the confidence of a woman in her 30s, the experience of a woman in her 40s, and the grace of a woman in her 50s. She is timeless. Her combination of poise, kindness, and intelligence are matchless, and I'm lucky to have had her on my team for a decade now. That was in 2007. So what a fabulous comment about that. And Hillary Clinton has been quoted as saying that she only has one daughter, but if she had a second one, it would be Huma. So Huma is the daughter of college professors. Her late father was an Islamic scholar from India, and her mother, a sociologist, was from Pakistan. Huma, however, was born in Kalamazoo, Michigan, but the family moved to Saudi Arabia when she was two, and Huma moved back to the United States to attend George Washington University. She said that at 15, she wanted to be an international journalist, inspired by CNN's correspondent Christiane Amanpour. And those plans changed when the White House intern program assigned her to the First Lady's office, not the press office as she had requested. And she's not been far from Hillary Clinton's side since that time. Here's another quote that I think is fabulous from Hillary Clinton's attorney, Bob Barnett. He told Vogue magazine, "Huma does make the trains run on time." So when she married Weiner in a ceremony, it was officiated by former President Bill Clinton. And it was an interesting union because she's Muslim and Weiner is Jewish. And, of course, they have a son who's, I guess, about 20 months old, year and a half. And it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. I can't imagine the pain. Well, I can't imagine the pain, actually. My first marriage, who's the father of my four children, my children were 2, 4, 6, and 8 when I was invited by my sister to go to Northern California to attend, at the time it was called the AT&T golfing event. It's the famous one that Bing Crosby made famous. It was called the Clam Bake back then. But in any event, I went by myself, which was unusual because I was never far from home or from my children or from my husband in the early stages of our marriage. We had been married 12 years, I think, at that time. And I went to Northern California, I think it was for 3 nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And my mom came to take care of the children, even though my husband was there. Anyway, that's another story. So go to Northern California. Things weren't okay in the marriage, but, you know, it just seemed like there was stress. We were having financial issues. And my husband was kind of struggling with his career. He was a stand-up comic, and that involved a lot of travel, which involved a lot of absences from the home, which was tough. I remember that Christmas before this, because this all went down in like February. Can't even tell you what year it was. It was in the 90s. He had a gig for a week at a casino in Las Vegas, and he was headlining the comedy show. I think it was at the Rio Hotel. And, you know, you take the jobs when they are offered to you. And so that meant that I was home alone with the four children who were 1, 3, 5, and 7 at the time. And he's in Las Vegas headlining, making money for the family. And, you know, you do what you do. And I remember Christmas Eve wrapping the presents by myself after I tucked the kids in bed. And Christmas morning, it was kind of bittersweet. And this, you know, the cell phones, they were barely around then, and phone calls were expensive, so there wasn't a lot of time that we got to talk with their father, my husband, and it was quiet, and it was certainly not like any Christmas I had ever had before, but you do what you need to do. And Christmas Eve Mass is usually around 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 4:30, and I got the kids dressed to go to church, as we did, being Catholic. And my third son, Christopher, who was 3 at the time, I got him dressed. You can imagine getting 4 kids dressed. I mean, my older two were probably able to do, you know, I set aside the stuff, but my younger two, I had to physically dress. And so I put on his socks and everything else, and then everyone gets into the van, and we get to church, and I wanted to make sure we were there early, 1, to get a parking space, and 2, to get seats so that we're not standing, because that's brutal. So I go around to the side, and I'm getting the kids out of the van, and lo and behold, Christopher gets out of the van, no shoes. And it's like, oh no, Christopher. Christopher is my artist. He's now 23, And well, so that's how I can get you the what year it is. So because he was three then, so it was 20 years ago. So there you go. So I was like, Christopher, you didn't put shoes on. He goes, oh. And so that was where his brain was. He just because he had socks on didn't mean to put shoes on. And I knew if I drove back to the house and blah, blah, it was going to take too long and then the best laid plans. So I just decided to go to church with him and his black socks and hope that nobody noticed. And then I was afraid that everyone was going to say she has one child too many if she can't even put frickin' shoes on the kid. And I was like, whatever. So fast forward to find out that not only was my husband then, the father of my four children, in Las Vegas doing his comedy shows, he was busily gambling away the paycheck that he earned that week. So he kept that from me. So fast forward the 2 months, and I'm staying with my sister, and she basically orchestrated an intervention. And she said, you need to know what's going on. And I was like, what's that? And she goes, your husband has a gambling problem. And I said, well, I know he gambles. I would be at the casinos, especially pre-children and actually pregnant with my second. I went with him as much as I could, and I'd see him playing craps, and I'd stand next to him to keep him company. And he'd always give me the winnings. Well, little did I know that he wasn't winning. He was, when I'd see him win, he'd give it to me, but he was racking up debt. He racked up debt in Vegas. That's a whole nother story. So I said, yeah, I know. And he actually had been looking at Gamblers Anonymous. And then, you know, I said, you know, we're working on that. What I didn't know was that he had been borrowing money from people behind my back, that he had the bank statements being held at the bank, and that he was robbing from Peter to pay Paul, all that kind of stuff. So then she said something about a drug use issue. And I was like, oh, okay. Didn't really know that. But, you know, I mean, there is sobriety and there are programs that take care of that. So I went to bed that night thinking, you know, these things aren't deal breakers. They were troubling, especially having four children and not really having the means, and you're gambling away your paycheck instead of earning it. And you know, that was a fitful night, if you will. So the next morning I get up and my sister's like, so what do you think? And I said, well, there's 12-step programs that can take care of this, and we can, you know, work on that, and it's not insurmountable. And then she starts telling me about his untoward advances towards her, my sister, when I was pregnant with our first, and still hurts. Towards my cousin's wife, who was my best friend in college, who I fixed up with my cousin. Our mothers are sisters. And that was news to me. I didn't know that. I remember thinking, wow, I have four babies with you, and I love you, and I'm married to you, and I've given you my all, and, you know, I'm not perfect, and I'm sure there's things that I need to work on to make things better, but you're making a pass at my sister? Like, really? That's disgusting. And then my cousin's wife said to me, yeah, and the worst of it was is that you'd be around the corner in the next room, and he'd stick his tongue down my throat. And I'd want to say to him, get your fucking tongue out of my throat, but you were around the corner and I didn't know what to do. And so when I heard that, man, that steel door just slammed shut, and I was like, you know, gambling, okay, drugs, okay, sex, no, can't deal with that, that's no. So I came home and I asked for a divorce, and he punched his fist through the wall and moved out of the house. And being in a Catholic community, I was somewhat of a pariah. And then they came around, which I really, 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 really appreciated. Because I was the token divorcee at the time. 20 years ago, just nobody's was getting divorced. And I called our Monsignor, excuse me, because we had been married in the Catholic Church. And I wanted to get an annulment. And my Monsignor said no. And I was like, what do you mean no? And he goes, you do the right thing. And I said, what's that? He goes, you take that man back. You married him. He's the father of your four children. You made a commitment. You take that man back. And I was like, really? So I did. And he had gotten sober and he started going to therapy and nothing changed. So I was looking at this man that I was married to and I thought, if I stay in this marriage, then my sons are going to think that this is how a man treats a woman. And my daughter's going to think that this is how a man treats a woman. And so the first time I left him for me, the second time I left him for my children, because I didn't want that dysfunction to be normal. So it's interesting because Dr. Bonnie yesterday talks about infidelity being inherited. And she goes through why she thinks it is. And it's pretty compelling. So my children were 2, 4, 6, and 8 when we divorced. And I remember after the divorce, I was still in love with my husband, my ex. And we would talk. He went out and started dating younger women, like twice half his age. And he was living the wild life. And we were having a phone conversation once about his visitation or something. And I said, I know that you cheated on me, but like, did you actually have sex with anybody? And there was this long pause. And I remember I was in the days where the phones were connected to the wall. And so I had this long cord. I remember falling to my knees. And he said, I never gave them my heart. And I was like, really? You actually had sex with other women? Like, it was so disgusting to me to think that he would do that. It was just like, oh. So I can relate to the being the woman who's shamed. I can't relate to staying and standing by. I don't know if that makes me not as good as a person as this Huma is and those other women who have stood by their men. I just know that personally I was repulsed by it and I couldn't wrap my arms around that. And the irony is I didn't even know the extent of the infidelity until after the divorce. So there's something in this that's, you may know Anthony Weiner, he had a handle called Carlos Danger. And there's a website called Slate. And if you put in your name, they say, one, a fantastic online name like Carlos Danger, you're in luck. Type your first and last names into the fields below and click Get My Name to find your personal pseudonym. So I did just that, and my name is Mateo Furtive. So they say you can share this on Facebook or share your name on Twitter. It's like, I think I might actually just do that. It's like, I have never sexted, and I don't intend on sexting, even though I'm a single woman. I've been asked by men in my life to send pictures of myself. I've never done that. I just like, what are you thinking? It's going to come back to haunt you. It's going to be out there in the cyberspace. That is not a good idea at all. And as has proven to be the case with these other folks that have been caught. And the other thing is when you're married, there's a paper trail. I mean, not that it's okay. But this 23-year-old or then 22-year-old gal, she wasn't married, but she was participating in activities with a married man. So along these lines, I don't know if you've heard about the San Diego mayor, Bob Filner. He is facing pressure to resign over allegations of sexual harassment that have been coming in. And yesterday, a third woman has come forward with allegations of sexual harassment. She did an exclusive interview with the PBS station there, and she alleges that he was, at the time, a congressman, repeatedly tried to kiss her in a public restaurant. Her name is Morgan Rose. She's a psychologist in the San Diego Unified School District. She founded something known as America's Angel Campaign, which is a national initiative dedicated to making the well-being of children America's highest priority. She claims in January of 2009, she and her team met with the then Congressman Filner in an effort to bring their initiative to a national stage. After that initial meeting, Filner called her home phone to request an additional private meeting. Morgan Rose said he asked for this meeting because he wanted to know, in his vernacular, who in the hell you are. So they scheduled to meet at Marie Callender's across from his congressional office in San Diego County. Woohoo! And when she arrived, she remembers being greeted by his assistant, who is a community representative, who suggested a booth facing the door. That assistant left, and she says the restaurant was empty. When the congressman arrived, he informed her that he brought the mission of America's Angel Campaign to Michelle Obama, and stated that Mrs. Obama requested a follow-up memo concerning how the campaign would discuss the escalating violence in America's military families. And she was like, yeah, how great is that? And then she said he started to stare at her. And then allegedly he said, your eyes have bewitched me. Upon which, she claims, he stood up, walked over to her side, sat down next to her, and wanted to kiss her. He tried to move my face towards his to kiss me on the mouth, she said. Would you please go back so we continue this meeting? This is an important topic. And according to her, the congressman said he would not move until you kiss me. She alleges that he tried to kiss her four separate times. And then he received a phone call. He stopped, answered his phone, and stated he needed to head back to the office, and he left. So Morgan Rose is the third woman to step forward this week to publicly make allegations against the mayor. She has since contacted the sheriff's department hotline to file an official complaint. So there we have three of them. It's like, wow, okay. And not that women don't do it, because obviously the men have to be philandering with somebody, but it seems that men, what is it? There's a great adage about power and corruption and all of that stuff. We've got a couple other stories, but before we run out of time, we want to make sure that we get in touch with Jennifer Kelton, and she's going to visit with us about badonlinedates.com as well as dressforthedate.com.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning, Jennifer. This is Maria Sanchez. You're live and on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Good. I admire your entrepreneurial spirit. First with your eco-friendly fashions, and then I know we're going to be speaking about dressforthedate.com, but do you mind sharing with us about badonlinedates.com first?
So with Bad Online Dates, I launched it in 2007. I had written a book. It's called Don't Use My Sweater Like a Towel. Interesting, I seem to be going back to clothing all the time, but anyhow. And he did use my sweater like a towel, but we won't go there. So anyway, I wrote a book, and what was happening was I was doing a lot of media at the time, and everybody was secretly telling me their bad date stories. It was like, all of a sudden, I was like bad date confessional. And what I realized was is that there was really nothing online that was a supportive community that would connect people through their bad date situations. And that was in 2007, so obviously in 2007, the dating space was not what it is today.
Right.
And it was taboo. I mean, it's like if you met somebody online, it was like, oh, no, we met at the pizza parlor. You know,
right.
I mean, it's like people were really very
desperate
ashamed of that. So I launched that. And then obviously since 2007, the space has evolved and changed so much. And so hence comes Dress for the Date, because from Bad Online Dates, what I realized was, and going back to my fashion roots, is that daters were complaining about how people were showing up, and even the matchmakers that I know, that they, you know, they work with their clients and they go through all this procedure, and then the dater shows up and they look like crap. And so basically Dress for the Date does is eliminate that, and it's your fashion wingman where you just have your go-to outfits and you know exactly, okay, that looks great, that works. And so it's exciting. You know, the response that I've gotten since launch has been pretty phenomenal.
And you have an interactive ability with your site.
Yeah, there's two different sessions that you can do that are through Skype or through iChat, and we can do that virtually. And what's nice, actually, what I really like about the virtual stuff is I never really say that you have to go out and shop, per se, but I literally go into people's closets with them and help them put together outfits and maybe suggest, you know, a couple pieces to augment what they already have. So it's an inexpensive way to have a better understanding of what you might already have in your drawers and in your closet.
So, Jennifer, is there a tone that you suggest for first dates in terms of attire? I mean, obviously you want to be attractive. You want to be, if we're talking about women, you want to be feminine, but not necessarily sexy or not necessarily too business or austere. Like, do you describe what you think ideally somebody should wear?
Oh, stripper shoes, of course. No, I'm joking. Oh, yeah. Lacquer. Head out to the Hustler store right now. Going back to that for women especially, I mean, keep it low key. You know, you don't need to pull out all the goods. And I would say, you know, just obviously it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you're just going, you know, for coffee, then don't show up in the ball gown. You know, if you're going for coffee, then show up in a nice pair of, you know, maybe black jeans with a nice, you know, button-down shirt or sweater. I mean, or even a statement, you know, T-shirt with a cardigan. I mean, something that's not going to scare the fella off that you have put so much energy into it. I mean, I think one of the things with dressing for the date that I recommend to people is that think about the environment that you're in. And dress for the environment. I mean, if you are getting on an airplane, you're not going to wear a bikini. Mm-hmm. And so to put thought into that is as to, you know, being appropriate. And I think, you know, it's interesting because with men obviously don't have as many choices as women have. And, you know, it's a little bit more, you know, it's button-down shirts or sweaters and jeans and slacks. And I just always suggest that don't wear any offensive T-shirts, no statement T-shirts that say, like, yo, meet me at the, you know, the
old guy's rule.
It's funny. I live down in Venice, and sometimes, you know, down on the boardwalk, I see these statement tees. I'm like, God, okay, guys, just don't wear those. Just don't. You know, shut up and drink your beer. No, don't wear that T-shirt. And I think, you know, the other thing going back to for women, always wear comfortable shoes. Always wear comfortable shoes. It's such a Debbie Downer if you're out there hobbling around. And then it also makes you look like you're not thinking, you know, like you're not ready for things.
Well, one of the things that I notice that I find just amazing is that where women wear those shoes where they're teetering on their tippy toes, and in cobblestone streets, like, say, Old Town in San Diego or at amusement parks. And I'm like, wow, what are you thinking? I mean, first of all, it's not healthy, but second of all, it's so inappropriate. And I like legs just as much as anybody, but not when you're going to be on your feet all day, for example.
Well, exactly. And that goes back to setting the tone and really understanding where you're going and what your environment is. You can, you know, I think for women, if you are really connected to your heels, then keep a pair of ballerina flats in your handbag. There's great ones that you can just toss in and that are easy to tote around. The hobbling around on heels is not attractive. Plus, it creates bunions.
But you know what, Jennifer, I noticed about men, you say they don't have options. Well, there seems to be a uniform that's been enforced now for a couple years. It's like the stonewashed jeans and the collared shirt that's out with the, you know, the tails. And I swear to goodness, you look around a room and it's 9 out of 10 guys have that look on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. One of the recent fellows that I styled, he kept leaning towards that. He kept going towards that. I'm like, no. Let's mix this up a little bit. You know, why don't we try a pocket square? Maybe a vest. We'll put a pocket square in a vest. And all of a sudden he lit up and he realized what a difference it makes. Even just with little accents. I mean, there's great things that guys can do, even if they're wearing kind of that uniform, that they can do great things with chunky silver, you know, chain bracelets, or, I mean, something just to give yourself a little bit of, that's a little bit different there. I'm a big fan of pocket squares, too. I think that men just look great in pocket squares.
I don't know what that is.
So a pocket square, it's like a handkerchief. But it doesn't look like an old man handkerchief. It looks like a stylish, David Beckham kind of, you know, like very
Do
handsome.
You Do you fold it so it's square on top, or do you have the points
there's
coming up?
There's different ways that you can fold pocket squares, but they go into a vest or they go into a jacket. And I think especially, you know, if you with like a single button jacket with a pocket square. And the great thing about that, if you're for men, if they're accessorizing with pocket squares, is that they can wear a t-shirt underneath it, a V-neck or a crew neck, and it just gives it a little bit of like a, you know, like, ooh, that's a little bit different there. So it's nice. I'm big on texture, and I'm not saying, oh, you have to be, you know, gaudy and chunk it up and put too many sprinkles on the cupcake. That's my metaphor. It's like, you know, you see a cupcake and there's too many sprinkles on it, and you're like, oh my goodness, why is there so many sprinkles on that cupcake? It only needed, you know, a few. That's for a whole other show. Yeah. Oh, that's my metaphor of life. Not so many sprinkles on the cupcake. But I think going back to with textures is that you, with those pieces, you can have very simple pieces for men and just add a few little textures to it that give you a little bit of snazz, you know. And I think as visual creatures, whether you notice it on a conscious or subconscious level, it's noticed. Like, that's a little bit, that's interesting over there.
Oh. Do you suggest the vest to be buttoned or not?
I think, you know, it depends on what you've got on underneath it. I think that if you have a button-down shirt underneath it, a collared button-down shirt, I think you're fine. But I think if you're wearing a T-shirt, you got to button it up. And then, again, it depends on what type of pants you're wearing. I think with jeans, you could get a little bit more away with an unbuttoned vest. But I still think jeans with a buttoned vest and a great white shirt, great crisp white shirt, is amazing. You know, that's definitely a classic look. And, you know, there too, for men, it's like you can mix up your shoes with that. I mean, that sort of look, you could even wear a great pair of Converse sneakers. Yeah.
I actually bought a vest this winter myself, which I hadn't worn one in probably, I don't know, 15 years or something. And I found it interesting because I paired it not only with skirts, but a pencil skirt, but also with black slacks. It would go both ways, more dressy and more casual. And I was like, oh, this is fun. But I always buttoned it.
I love that. Actually, you know, it's funny. I'm doing a styling event today, and I am wearing black capri slacks with Oxford's black vest and a white t-shirt. So there you go. And so I it was like vest you, buttoned or unbuttoned, but I buttoned the vest.
The capris are short to the knee?
Then right at ankle.
Okay. Because I was going to say the shorter look I think would make it be like visually a lot because you've got the short pant and then the short.
Yeah, you're too
short
chopped
vest.
Up. Yeah.
But one of the things that I also would like you to help share is that you deal with all kinds of folks, so all kinds of shapes and all kinds of people. So people who like to shop, people who don't like to shop, people who are newly single or widowed or, you know, maybe not in shape or in the greatest shape. And so can you speak to that kind of, because that's, we usually think of fashionistas as only the pencil thin models that are unattainable for the rest of us.
I have to tell you, my favorite clients are the ones where I'm going to Ross or I'm going into the thrift stores because it's more exciting. It's more of an adventure at that point. But I think one of the things that people need to realize is they've just gone through a divorce or if they've just lost a lot of weight, that to not be intimidated by fashion. And so when I go out there with clients and what we offer is that it's for everybody. It's for every size, shape. It doesn't matter your economy level. We can go, again, to a thrift store. We can go to Neiman Marcus. It really doesn't matter as far as, you know, what you have to spend. And I would say probably one of the things I've noticed most is that with men that they don't like shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So with Dress for the Date is that we try to make it fun. We try to make it a good time. We try to make it an enjoyable experience and where you leave. And literally all the male clients that we've had to date have left the shopping experience wearing everything that we had just purchased.
So, and finally, Jennifer, how do you charge? What is your pay scale?
It goes from $20 up to $500. The $20 one starts with the internet, and then up to $500, that's an in-person. Oh, and with $500, you also get happy hour included.
Because you're also a dating advisor.
Yeah, by default. By default. You know what? I'm really hesitant to say, oh, I'm a dating expert, but because I've been in the dating space so long, and from writing the book and from looking at online dating since 2007, obviously I've seen a lot of stuff. And wherever I go, when I give people my card or I tell them what I do, they start telling me, you know, oh my goodness, blah, blah. So yeah, so it has happened by default, but I'm happy to give dating advice. I get lots of emails, and when I'm out with the clients, it usually ends up that there's dating advice that goes on with that too.
And do you have some, like, 3 to 5 tips for internet dating in terms of how to make wade through the process and be found and find?
Well, don't lie. Put real pictures out there and have a really good username. Have a username that stands out. Don't have just a username that's I love dogs or do something that's, you know, if you're a guitar player, be like guitar 123 or I don't know, something, but put something that in your username that relates back to you that's a little bit catchy. And then I would say picture is very important. If you don't have a good picture, get a good picture. Those bathroom shots, fellas, where you're in the mirror and, you know, you have your shirt off just aren't working. And it also makes the ladies think that you have no friends. Like, you couldn't even find a friend to take your profile picture.
What is with that? There was a picture this week of Geraldo Rivera naked from the waist, actually from the groin up. You could see those muscles that go down into the groin. That in the bathroom with the camera in the mirror, just like you're talking about. It's like, what are you thinking? I don't want to see you like that. I think of you as a journalist, not as some dude who's nude, who happens to be fairly buff. But nevertheless, it's like, oh, and Anthony Weiner, there was a picture of him this week that was one of his sexting things. Why do they think, they must think it's attractive because that's what they want the women to do, naked from the waist up.
You know what's interesting is I read an article this morning, and it was that Anthony Weiner really wants to be a porn star. And I thought about that as I was reading the article. I was like, well, maybe that's it. Maybe it's some kind, not that we're going to get all psychologists here, but maybe there's something of, you know, an exhibitionist quality that goes on with that where, I want people to see my junk. Huh. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. It was an interesting article. It was a really nice perspective to look at it that way, where you're like, as a human, that could be the motivating force. And gosh, we're going to get completely off topic here, but his poor wife.
I know. I mentioned that. I before you and I had this conversation, I shared my story with my ex who cheated on me, and I to publicly stand by him. It's like, that wouldn't be me. But good tips are tell the truth, have a decent picture, have a handle that describes you. I don't know if you know that Slate just made news today because they put in a widget that if you put in your first and last names, you get a handle. And so mine is Mateo Furtiv because he did Carlos Danger. So is there anything else in terms of how you describe yourself in your profile and or do you look for people or you wait to be found?
Okay, keep it short. We don't need a dissertation. We don't need, you know, the thesis on your entire life. Just keep it short. Get to the straight to the point. Leave out, I love long walks on the beach. Yes. I like to drink wine. Okay, we all like to do that.
Yeah.
we all like to do that. So leave that out. Again, highlight the interesting things that you do. You know, if you ride horses, you know, talk about, you know, in a short sentence about your connection with horses and keep it interesting. And then as far as go out there and look, you can reach out to people for sure on both sides, both men and women, but be prepared. You're going to get rejected. You're going to get rejected. And you know what the worst part of it is that, and I've always talked about this from day one without online dates, is that it's a computer that's rejecting you. It's not even a person. So you've put a lot of energy. You've gone through all these profiles, you have some secret crush on somebody that you think is your perfect soulmate, and then they never hear back. So be prepared. You're going to get rejected, and that's okay. That's just part of it. And you also have to keep in mind that that person might not even be a real person. That person
right.
could be that person could be lying, catfishing. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't take anything too personally. Keep it light. Don't get too hung up on, oh, why, what, where, you know, who. If they get back to you, great. If they don't, then don't
Next.
Worry about it. Exactly. And the other thing is always meet in a public place first. Always meet in a public place
good
first.
Good advice, Jennifer.
Yeah, always.
When we post the podcast, we'll put your contact information up as well as your website. So thank you so much for your time and good luck with your event today.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much for having me. And don't hurry out for those stripper heels too quick. I hear you running out the door now.
Thank you, Jennifer. Continued
okay,
success.
Thank you so much. Okay, have a great
You're delightful.
Day.
Delightful. Okay, appreciate
right,
it. Bye-bye. And as always, we post our contact information when we post the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful day. We look forward to visiting with you mañana.